Hi, welcome to the Career Refresh Podcast. I'm your host, Jill Griffin. I'm a former media and marketing executive turned career strategist and executive coach. I spent my career working my way up and through the ranks of global organizations and startups, and today I show others how to do the same. Join me each week as we discuss the strategies and actionable steps to leverage your strengths, increase your confidence, and develop your career well-being. Ready? Let's do it. Hey, everyone, this is Jill Griffin, and welcome back to the Career Refresh Podcast. Continuing with the People I Believe You Should Know and Meet series, I am introducing you today to one of my dearest friends from over 30 years, Amanda Lawrence. Amanda has an incredible story, and I really feel that when you hear it, you will understand. Amanda is a married mother with two children, with one of them on the autism spectrum. And one of the things that we're going to really talk about today is how she has been able to maintain both being successful in her career, being able to help both her neurodivergent child and her mainstream child get the services and what they need in order to be able to be successful in their lives, all while also being a assistant vice president and team leads of claims and claims advocate for Alliant Insurance Services. She has 26 years of claims handling management and account services, broker services. She has this really unique ability and understanding of the claims process, and really, you know, really in a consultative position, really helping her clients understand what's best for them and servicing them. She is an advocate for inclusivity and of special needs community and support for neurotypical siblings who are truly the unsung heroes in the families. So with that, please welcome one of my nearest and dearest, Amanda Lawrence.
Hi, Jill. How are you? Thank you so much for that introduction. I'm a little verklempt now. You're bringing a little tear to my eye. But I appreciate you having me on, and I look forward to our chat.
It's great. Yeah. And for everyone listening, we were both just sharing how, I'm emotional because I have watched what Amanda has created. I have watched how successful she is and how she is working with, you know, a neurodivergent child on the spectrum, as I said, but also navigating everything that she does. And I feel that, you know, COVID brought a lot of this into the mainstream, but all of us know who have neurodivergent members of our family and our friend circle and the people that are their caretakers. We know what they have been working with and helping support these children and individuals for years. It just became much more on the mainstream because if you're working from home during a pandemic and the needs of your children are not being met, and therefore it's all on you, the primary caretakers and parents, it puts us in a different position. And I think that having stories and putting and shining a light on this can really help us all have a little bit level, additional level of understanding. If, you know, perhaps that's one of our colleagues, perhaps that's one of our coworkers that's going through that. And then also within our family. So before we get into that part of the very important message in the story, I want to take us back and I want to go back to the early years. And I want you to tell us, what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
And you're going to laugh because you know this is true. I totally wanted to be a rock star. I wanted to sing. I wanted to dance. I wanted to perform. Listen, I loved riding my bike and playing with my sisters and my friends, but I was going to be front and center stage, like Pat Benatar, Debbie Harry, even maybe David Lee Roth. That's what I was going to do.
Amazing, amazing. So I just want to paint a little bit of a picture for everyone. So Amanda and I met at college, and I was a Long Island girl. So my clothes were very often from like the Gap and J. Crew and like very preppy, probably a lot of L.L. Bean and Land's End in there too, right? Like love those brands, but that was the clothing that I wore. And there I meet Amanda, who is this gorgeous woman who is wearing an MC like leather motorcycle jacket with motorcycle boots. And I was like equally scared of her and equally attracted to her. Like, who is this woman? And then there was one year that she told me she was going to go as me for Halloween, as like a little preppy.
But I wanted to give you my jacket, so you went as me. It was that mutual admiration. I loved your clothes. I just couldn't carry them off. There was no way in college I was carrying that off. So I just went with what I knew.
So funny. So tell me, how does the idea, I mean, I could fill in the blanks, but I want you to tell our listeners, how does the idea of being a rock star fit into what you do today?
Well, I still want to be a rock star. I just take my multivitamin, go to bed at 10 o'clock now. But, you know, the reason I love entertainers is I feel like they have such personality. They've got bravado, right? They've got that it factor that I just was always fascinated by and attracted to. You know, coming along with also, there's a lot of stress in life. And when you listen to some music, your problems go away. You're having a good time, or you're having a good cry. Like, they bring out feelings in you.
I love it.
Right. That just bring emotions to the table. So we're not all walking around like robots, you know, and it also, it's fierce. Like, it's like kick ass, keep moving. You got to get it done. Like, that's something I've just always admired. Definitely.
What are some of your rally songs? Like, if you need to get yourself psyched up for a big work day ahead, what are some of your rally songs?
Thunderstruck by AC/DC. If that song doesn't get you out of your seat, nothing will.
are you all painting a picture here of this badass woman with the motorcycle jacket? I love it. Thunderstruck. Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. I'm going to throw you for a loop. I also love disco. I love Chic. I loved Earth, Wind and Fire. September is my dancing song, you know, and when you need to like shake it off. I love all types of music. So I may focus mostly on rock and roll. I was brought up in a musical household. It's always been something of, you know, a mainstream in my household. Both my parents were in the music industry. All three of my sisters have played instruments. So I am not afraid to go look into other types of music. I went to the Duran Duran concert last week. Like, I don't care what it is. If I find a love in it, I'm gonna, you know, cherish that moment that I had to listen or watch.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. Let's bring it back towards your career. You've been at your current company for over 14 years and doing what you do in excellence for over 26 years. How do you keep your career fresh?
I think for me, professionally, because I'm in claims, my job is ever changing. It's never boring. So what I do is I advocate for my clients on their large construction accident claims. So everything that comes across my desk is a problem. And there's a lot of calming people down, and as well as a lot of negotiating and a lot of advocating. So I am lucky enough to be in a position where my job is really never mundane, but it's a lot of managing personalities and keeping up with ever-changing insurance laws, ever-changing cases. I find it a great challenge, and I find it very rewarding, because for me, there's nothing more satisfying than being able to solve a problem or lead a charge to solve a problem. Mm. I like doing that. So I aspire to be a fixer and a mentor now. But I'm also not egotistic enough to say that I know everything. That's ridiculous. I have a lot to learn, but I like the people that I work with, and that makes staying at my company that much easier. When I feel frustrated or I'm feeling in a slump, like, that's what I focus on, that I like where I work. I like what I do. I'm lucky enough that it's not boring. And so that's how I keep that momentum going. And that's how I maintain that level of constantly learning.
Mm, okay. Yeah. And I can see that also, you know, you've always been known as a connector and a networker. And, you know, even back when we were in college, you would be like, oh, don't you know so-and-so? And, you know, you knew everyone and everything. And I would imagine a lot of that comes into your claims work of like really getting to know, even if it's someone you don't know for a long time, getting to know them on the personal level, that human connection aspect. But I have to imagine really helps your day and helps aspects of the work you do. Would you agree?
I think so. I like being a people person. I think I'm kind of a natural when it comes to just trying to connect with people. I mean, I have this weird ability. I know you know this, but I never forget a face. Never. Nope. Now, I may not remember someone's, you know, name. I know that's weird because I'm not great at that. But if the time is appropriate, I'm going to take that time to ask someone, have we met before? Because you are so familiar. And that starts a conversation. Whether you know the person or not, the person could say, I've never seen you, heard of you in my entire life. I may just look like someone you know. But at least it starts that conversation, right?
And it makes people feel seen. And even if you haven't met before, it's people, what is that Maya Angelou quote? People don't remember what you say. They remember how you made them feel. Again, I'm paraphrasing, but that's that idea that if you came up to me and be like, haven't you met before? It also helps me feel like, oh, there's something about me that's familiar or memorable. And there's a connection there. So
absolutely,
I think that's a really beautiful way of weaving in your connector and your connecting abilities to help people feel seen and heard. And that's really what most people just want. They want that level of validation.
Thank you. Well, you know, people are fascinating. I love to people watch. Who doesn't love to people watch, right? Mm. I feel like when you talk to someone, whether it's at a professional forum or not, like you kind of need to know how to speak to people, right? You need to... Your goal is to get them to respond. So that's really the key. I'm more of a get flies with honey type of girl. Mm-hmm. I approach it in business as, hey, I'm not going on the attack for you. This is business. I may need something from you at a later date. So I try to stay calm and I'll ask questions. If I'm knowledgeable on the topic, I'll give my point of view and I hope I get results. Unless the person's a complete jerk, but even then, when you're at work, if you have to deal with them, you just got to do it. Don't get too much in the weeds. Just try to work with people because that's what we're here for. Right.
Right. And one of the things also about you is you have this incredible sense of humor. How have you known, I have to imagine it's helped you tremendously, but how have you managed, when to bring humor in? Because at times you're dealing with serious things and when to not, that it's not the right time for humor.
That comes along with the people watching as well. And body language is really a big telltale. But I've also learned just because someone has their arms crossed doesn't necessarily mean they're angry. They could be cold. Like never try to guess what someone is feeling. Listen to what they're saying. If you're the one to initiate the conversation, come in politely, ask your questions. I use humor. That's my key. If you can find the key to open a door, whether it's humor or maybe you're if you're an assertive person and you command respect, whatever it is that is your niche, try to hone in on that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's important. It's not only do you know what to say to people, but you got to know how to talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to take a little bit of a pivot and I want to talk a little bit about your children and what it's like, as a mother of a neurodivergent child. So tell us a little bit about your son.
My son is a teenager. He just turned 16. He is on the, thank you. He's on the autism spectrum. Recently, when he was first diagnosed, it was PDD-NOS, which was pervasive development disorder, not otherwise signaled or something like that. They've changed it a little bit now. So he is ASD, autism spectrum, because no two people with autism are the same. And I would say he's maybe a level two. He's independent in some regards. His speech is a little delayed. His cognitive ability is a little delayed, but he is smart as a whip. And he also has that talent that I have. That he never forgets a face or never forgets a thing. Yeah. So he's a great kid and His sister's a great kid, and I'm so lucky to be their mom. But I'm not going to lie. That's one of the hardest challenges as being a professional and a mother or a caregiver. Not everybody has a child with a disability. Some people have parents, you know, they watch out for siblings, grandparents, friends. If you're doing both that level of working full time and being a caregiver, it is tough. You have to really find the time to do everything because they're both so necessary. They're not jobs that you can just brush aside. They are necessary. You have to make them work. So before the pandemic, we had a sitter at home who would be there after school, get them off the bus, play with them, homework, whatever. Now I do a hybrid from home and the office. So when my son is in school, that's when I get most of my day done. I stay very organized. I try to do the tasks in a priority level because when he comes home, he's a great kid, but as a teenager, he still hasn't learned boundaries. It's not the first thing he thinks of, right? So he'll come in sometimes, you know, ramped up, you know, either wanting to talk to me or not, needing help with the homework, stressed out. And he can become very agitated. He can become very loud in a workspace. Mm-hmm. That's the times I'm going to put on my mute button, or I'm going to change my Zoom screen, or I'm going to excuse myself for a minute. And that's the same with my daughter too, because she's a preteen. So she has that same level of attention that she needs. So I can do the same for her too. But, you know, there have been moments I texted my supervisor, please, you got to finish this call. She's a great boss and she's a caregiver to her mother and she's a mom herself. So she's always willing to help. But my husband and I, we have our kids in a great routine and they get some downtime before they love, you know, doing whatever they do and before they go to bed. And we made that work for us. We noticed that routine soothes our older son and has become a good pattern for my daughter. So we base our home life on routine too. So like I have a calendar and a diary for my job. I kind of have the same thing at home. And
I can see why that would be so important to keep routine. I mean, routine in general, but to keep routine with, you know, the various personalities in the family.
Yes. And there are times that things spin out of the routine. But if you know, what I do anyway is if I can keep that routine most of the time, then I can tell my son, you know, he's 16 now. So this is years and years and years of telling him sometimes you have to be flexible. There's flexibility. So we might have to run to the supermarket because we have no eggs right now and I'm making an omelet, but you have to learn to be flexible. And it would be much appreciated if we could just get an extra 20 minutes to do other things. And over time, he kind of grasped that with maturity. And now, you know, we have that pattern going down. I'm also lucky that my husband is also full-time home and office. He's just as involved in the children's lives in the household as I am. So he does the laundry. He does the cooking too. So, hey, for all those dads listening, we recognize you do great things as well. It's not only about the mom. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a challenge, but we group together and we do what we got to do.
Yeah. I want to take us back to something you said. You mentioned that, you know, sometimes if your son comes home, it might be noisy or he might need support. And that you said you texted or you might, you know, text or Slack your supervisor and say, can you take this? So that tells me that your supervisor knows. Was there ever a time where you had to think about whether or not to disclose?
Yes. When I first started working at my company, I would say my son was maybe a year and a half, 2 years old. I knew that I was going to face some challenges that maybe I'd have to be out of the office. Maybe I'd have to leave. Maybe I would have a CSE meeting that would take 3 hours. It's nothing to do with work. And there's only so many days you can take, right? So I set the stage that my bosses know that I'm reliable. I'm knowledgeable and I'm reliable. And please trust me that I can get the job done. Please give me the autonomy that I could get the job done. So, you know, that's something that was always instilled in me, to the importance of a job well done, right? No matter what it is. So knowing I wanted to kind of move up the corporate ladder, I felt like when he was first diagnosed, it was better that I be transparent. And so I did disclose his needs and his challenges to my immediate supervisors. So I figured I knew what I was about to face. I wanted them to know that I still care about my job. I care about my position. Yeah. And, you know, having children with special needs can also be very expensive. I wasn't just going to throw away a paycheck. It's just something I couldn't do. You know, I wrote down this fact here. Hold on, let me get it for you. Here it is. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, it will take roughly $240,000 to raise a child from birth to age 18. For a special needs child, those expenses can quadruple.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow is right. So the light bulb over my head is, holy cow, I need a paycheck.
Yeah. So the ability, I mean, just, you know, want to call out, I mean, it shouldn't be... it shouldn't be special, but the fact that your, you know, supervisor and your team were understanding, you just, you know, God, I just take a moment and like appreciate those people so much, because that isn't the norm. So, you know, awesome for you and your family that you do have that. Have there ever been a time in which, you know, you had to figure out how to blend, like you had a big presentation or a big meeting or something that was, you know, happening, but then at the same time, something was going on with your children. And how did you navigate meeting both requirements?
You have to find your village. You have to find your people. I was lucky enough that when I divulged this to my supervisor, I got some sympathy. It turned out that my supervisor was always already in a similar situation. So she, you know, and she's also one of those people who was a great mentor and knows that we are professionals, but we're not robots. We're human, right? So she gave me a little bit of leeway. I also showed appreciation in letting them know, I know I'm not unique. You could give me a big so what and tell me to hit the road. Yeah. I wanted to show them that I was so thankful and so grateful. So if there were things that I couldn't do in regards to my professional life, if I couldn't go to a meeting for any reason, I made sure I prepared for it before. I would call the client and say, you know, I have this conflict. Can we change the meeting? What's the worst they're going to say? No, no. Then I'd send someone in my place. Same thing with home. My kid maybe is not feeling well and is a little nauseous, maybe not a fever. I'll call, you know, somebody in my family or a friend and neighbor and say, hey, I can make it home, but I need about 3 hours. Can you stay home with my kid? Just put him to bed or put her to bed and just stay in the house and I will be home at this time. If you can find your people, find your village, like find your confidant and your friends, you know, take all the help you can. Don't ever say, no, I got it all. I can handle it all. No, that's wrong. That's the wrong way to do it. Coworkers too. If you have people who maybe are your support staff or you're training them, send them to the meeting. It's a learning experience for them too. If they're prepared, you can send them in your place and you can give your client the heads up and saying, I'm sending this person. They're not as seasoned as me. If you have any questions, you can absolutely call me. But is this something that I can send somebody else in my office to?
Because it gives them an opportunity to step up and get additional experience.
Right.
Also.
Right.
So it can create that win situation all around.
Right. But you got to remember, it's not really a balance, right? I don't like to say no. Well, when
that's
you balance, right, it's totally a myth. You're delusional if you think otherwise.
Right.
But when you think of the word balance, right? Something goes up, something comes down. Something goes up, something comes down. When you are a caregiver and a professional, I think what works better is you integrate it. You immerse it together. You are a mom. You are a professional. You are an aunt. You are a dog walker. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a balance, because I think if you say it's a balance, then the times that you're low, you're bringing your mindset into, I'm at a low point. And I think that you might fall into that trap then, that you're feeling defeated. Mm. You can't be defeated if you have these jobs to do. So being a mother, being a professional, they're not mutually exclusive, but they are intertwined. So instead of balance, I like to say integrate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, and it's also, we're hearing more and more of it, right? This idea of like work-life balance, which of course is just silly. And I also say, why isn't it life before work? And then it's really life-work integration. So, I think that's a really important point. When you think about your family, how do you balance the support that your neurodivergent child needs with the support and attention that your neurotypical child needs? How do you balance that?
They are different types of needs. You have to watch, you have to pay attention. My son has no boundaries. I can be on a call like I am with you right now. He could walk right up and start talking to me. I'm like, I am on the phone. But your typical, for lack of a better word, child may not do that. They might see that your hands are full and take a step back and not share with you some things that they may need. I have always told my daughter, if she needs me, let me know. We have a code word if we're in public that she could just say, Mom, it's lemonade. Mom, I really could use some lemonade. That means I better stop. And she really needs me at that time. I let her know that she is just as important as her brother. But she is really a true trooper. Yeah. She takes on the responsibility for him, which I tell her, he's not your responsibility. I'm the parent. You're not. But she's like, he's my brother. I'm going to take on that responsibility. I want to look out for him too. So I make sure then that when she needs me, I've got her back. That's why I say, like you said before, she's the unsung hero. She really is the unsung hero in this family. It is my husband's job and I to take care of my kids. And she just looks out for him like the little big sister. It's incredible. It really is. Very lucky.
It's beautiful. I also have a neurodivergent and a developmentally disabled brother, and he's the youngest. And my older brother and I, same thing. It's like, that's my brother. Like, I'm helping out as much as possible, you know, through the years when we all live in the same house together, as much as possible with my parents too. It wasn't, it was never a burden. It was just, this is my family. This is the way we are. So,
this is who we are. I'm sure you also didn't give him slack though, if he was supposed to do some. No, he's your sibling. Like, whoa.
He was treated within the, sort of the equity of what everybody, you know, everybody got what they needed and everyone was met with, based on where they were. We met the needs of the individuals within the family. So I get that.
You speak his language. That's what I say. I speak their language. Yes.
Yes. What would you say is the biggest success? I mean, I'd imagine you've had to do a ton of advocating for your son. What would you say is your biggest success in advocating for him?
I would say when he was in the fifth grade, our school is K through six. Mm-hmm. So he'd be going to the middle school in seventh grade. So when they were in fifth grade, him and the friends in his class, who were all kind of the same level of specialty, I got to be very good friends with some of their moms. So a few of the moms and I were chatting about, what are our kids going to do once they go to the middle school? It's a different school district. It's huge. And do they have what our kids need by way of education? So, you know, there are five high schools in my district. They all have wonderful programs that fit the level of disability or intelligence where the children are, right? But those schools also focused on a CDOS, which I don't know if a lot of people know. A CDOS is a work-based certificate. It's not really recognized as a diploma.
Okay.
And the high schools that my kids and our kids in that high school district were zoned to require a Regents diploma. Okay. I personally think that's unfair. I think a Regents diploma should be a higher accreditation. If someone's very capable of getting a local diploma, they should. So we thought that was ridiculous. We wanted our kids to go on to either find a profession or possibly go on to a higher level of education at college. There's a lot of colleges now who offer classes for people with certain needs. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do it in fifth grade. So we gave the district time to think about this, chew on it. We met with the superintendent of special needs, and we guaranteed at least our kids, which was seven kids in our class, in that self-contained class, to form a class where the curriculum could potentially offer a local diploma, and they would not be alternately assessed unless the parent had at least a major say in determining if the child needs to be alternately assessed, which means they're not on an education track, they're on a vocation track.
Okay.
And we reminded them there were parents in the other four towns that I'm sure have self-contained classes and would guarantee them, you know, more children. So we said, this is a really good chance for you as a school to acknowledge differently abled learners, promote diversity. And to be honest, you're going to get a bigger budget from the Board of Education if you have a self-contained class. So we were pleasantly surprised that they actually jumped at the chance. Our minds were blown. And our high school now in our district has a class. They call it the PACE program that supports their level of learning. So
you did all of this while you were also
working full time.
Working full time.
Yes.
All of this.
Yes.
So how did you, again, like, I feel like this comes into mindset. How did you manage your mind where you're having, you know, good days at work, and I'm sure frustration days at work, because we're all human. You're having good days at home, and then you're also having frustration at home. And yet you're also now, you know, advocating to the school board and coordinating with the other parents. Like, what would you say was the most successful mindset, either thought or hack you did in order to maintain this all and be able to continue to move things forward?
We came together as parents with the same need. We made sure that whatever we wanted from the school, there was four of us that we all were in agreement with. We weren't going to knock down anyone's idea. We wanted to go in with the game plan of a shared idea. So we were meeting with ourselves, maybe at night we'd run to Starbucks, get a cup of coffee, and chat for like 20 minutes. We would call the schools in our interim time. I'd call during my lunch break or on the drive home. We would meet with the schools. That's when I'd go to my bosses and say, I need to be out of the office at this period of time. So I tried not to be out of the office too much. And I think that having that mindset, I've got a game plan. It's good for me. It's good for the school. It's a win-win. They have nothing to lose. And what's the worst they're going to say? I said it before. They're going to say no.
Right.
I wasn't focused on the no. I was focused on the yes. And we went to them with ideas that were, again, a win-win. There was no downside to them taking on this class.
And
that's how I did it. I just tried to balance everything. And hopefully, you know, I didn't lose my mind doing it. I stayed sane.
Yeah. Okay. My last question for you is what would you say to us? What tips would you give to people who do not have a neurodivergent child in their family, or they may have something else, right? You know, it may be caring for, as you said, an aging parent at home. What would you say to us so that we can create a culture of inclusion?
That is an excellent question. I wish I had the perfect answer. Okay. I try to stay positive. I try to ward off those like destructive thoughts, those obsessive thoughts. I can't. For me, I learned this a very long time ago from my family, that you can always look ahead and try to guess what you need to do. But if you really want to see your successes, you should look 6 months behind you and see how you've grown. Mm. And I feel if you can take that ability to see where you came from 6 months ago, you then have the ability in small steps to make certain changes and to try to go up that incline rather than decline. Find a couple of minutes to think about, find 5-10 minutes to clear your head, take on an app, listen to a podcast, just to clear your head, and then regroup, come back together and be like, okay, 6 months ago I was here. I want to be here in another 6 months, and just keep going up the ladder the best you can.
So looking back, evaluating the success, reflecting on it and seeing sort of what parts of that you want to pull forward.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How can I be a better colleague to you?
You just have to be a friendly face, someone who is willing to help. If you see me down in a low, you don't have to sit there and try to fix all my problems. But if you put a hand on my shoulder and say, it's going to be okay, that is priceless to someone who is constantly frazzled. I would say I have people in my life that I am lucky enough, such as you, to do that for me. We know each other well enough that we could say, you okay? You're going through something. Yeah. And that is the same on the work front. If you have a colleague that you really get along with, maybe you guys have lunch all the time together or you're talking on the phone all the time, every now and then ask them how they're doing, not how their job is doing. How are they doing?
Okay. I think that level of empathy and compassion for others.
So yes.
Basically be human and understand that.
Be human.
A tough right. day and there's more that meets the eye. It may not just be about the workload in front of them. It may be about, you know, the larger picture of what's going on in their life.
Yes.
So this was a treat. And I really thank you for letting people know, giving them a little glimpse into, you know, your life and how you've managed both a successful career and managed within your home. Tell our listeners the charities you support and how they can also do so and support those same charities.
I am a big admirer of Life's Work. Along with Life's Work comes the Family Center for Autism. Life's Work is a program which helps differently abled learners and people with developmental disabilities or physical disabilities find housing, find work programs. For the younger people in their program, they have the Family Center for Autism, which I send my son, and that gives a calendar of social activities where then the kids can socialize. You know, they're always working. There's no harder worker than a special needs person, honestly.
Yeah.
This gives them the ability to play, maybe learn some social skills if it's not really their forte, or find something a little, you know, a talent that they have a knack in. And the other foundation that I support is the Hance Family Foundation. That was an organization based on the ideals of Allison, Emma, and Kate Hance. I don't know if you remember, quite a few years ago, there was an accident on the Taconic Parkway where three little girls were unfortunately killed. So their parents decided to... This makes me a little weepy. I'm sorry. Their parents decided to use this time and use this charity to promote self-esteem programs worldwide. They promote social and emotional learning in memory of their daughters because their daughters live their lives with such enthusiastic confidence. Wow. And I think that's something so important for the siblings of persons who are on a spectrum, because those siblings need just as much support as the other child does. So those are the charities I support. They provide great service and great guidance to both my children personally. And I've seen the successes that they've done pretty much worldwide, actually. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, we're going to put those links in the show notes so people can also learn about those two organizations. and support them too. Amanda, thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to have a conversation and to really give people an idea of, again, how you've been successful, how you work within the circumstances in your life, and how you are an example of what's possible. So
thank you, Jill. I want to say thank you too. You are an inspiration. You are that friend that I always look at and be like, look at this girl. Look at her go. Look at her go. I am always so impressed with you. I love you dearly. I'll talk to you very, very soon. But thank you so much. And I hope that maybe some of the stuff I share today will help somebody else, I hope.
Okay? I believe it will. Thanks so much. Love you.
Thank you. Bye. Love you. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Career Refresh Podcast. If you're enjoying this and you want more information, go to my website, jillgriffincoaching.com. There you can find information on how to work with me one-on-one or my group programs, or even bring me into your workplace. I'll put the link to my website in the show notes. But hey, listen, before you go, do me a favor. Rate and review this podcast because it definitely helps me get the word out to people everywhere so that they can also thrive in the workplace. All right, friends, I appreciate you. I'll see you soon.